Hello everybody, and welcome back to the Dragon's Library. So today, we are reviewing Gallant, a book by V.E. Schwab, which came out in March, but I haven't reviewed it yet, because I hadn't really at the time, and then I didn't think about it earlier, so reviewing it now. I haven't read any of this author's other works, although I did see her name on several other novels while working at Barnes & Noble. So I'm somewhat familiar with her, but I've never actually, you know, read any of her stuff. Her good things. Now, some of you might be wondering why I'm reviewing it instead of Ordinary Monsters. Well, I'm still reading through that book, or specifically listening to it, and needed something to review specifically for today. I had it in reserve, so I decided to finally give this book I read a few months ago a proper review. With that out of the way, what is this story about? Olivia Pryor grew up mute and surrounded by shades only she can see. Left on the doorstep of an orphanage as a child, all Olivia has is a journal which belonged to her mother. Having lost hope of family, she is surprised when a letter arrives from her uncle, who has been searching for her, calling his niece home to Gallant. But when she arrives, Olivia is informed that her uncle has been dead for a year. Greeted by two servants, Edgar and Hannah, as well as her cousin Matthew, Olivia's last remaining family, the girl's dreams begin to crumble around her. While Matthew tries to convince the servants to send her away, Olivia finds herself drawn through a wall into a dark reflection of the Gallant Manor, ruled by a shadowy master with even darker ambitions. So, Gallant is a wonderful story, whose writing is imbued with a haunting and truly tragic beauty. The peaceful home gradually gives way to a creeping dread that seems to seep through every piece that makes up the house. The whole thing reminds me of Lock and Key, filtered through Uprooted. When Olivia first arrives at the house, she views the world as an orphan who has had to fight for everything she has. Sure, Olivia can see ghosts, but they don't really do much, and when she arrives at the house, the situation slowly shifts. Her cousin wants her gone. At first, it seems really petulant, like he's annoyed she's not, like, the heir or whatever. But as time passes, the reader and Olivia begin to realize he's trying to protect the last piece of family from the curse that has taken everything from him. Olivia, with the help of the servant, simply wants to stay in a place that, to her, is a paradise. I really like Olivia as a protagonist, and one of the main reasons is her flaws. She's selfish and spiteful at times, often to those who slight her, but she's not just cruel or angry. She shows genuine affection to those who care for her, like the two servants, specifically Hannah, who welcome her to Gallant, but is quick to draw a fence, like she does with Matthew. The fact that she's mute is played as a part of her life, and not something that she really overcomes. She cannot speak, and much of her frustration comes with the struggle of not being able to communicate with and connect to others. This comes to parallel her communication with the dead shades and the other Gallant that she can speak with easier using her thoughts than any living creature. This portrays her as something almost as much dead as she is alive. This reading is enhanced partially by a reveal midway through the story. Meanwhile, through stories and backtalk in the journal, you have Olivia's mother, whose journal paints with a frantic mania. She committed a taboo and then fell in love, which caused her to flee the house with her husband, and the Pryor family long believed her dead, never realizing the truth of what she had done. Matthew is an interesting foil to Olivia, where she views Gallant as a new home full of opportunities. He only sees the place where his family has died horrible deaths in service of a task most of them never asked for. He constantly repeats, "Father said I was the last, and I will be the last," because despite now understanding that anyone can watch over the Gallant, it is the Pryors who are at the greatest risk. Until Olivia arrived, he was resigned to simply living out a hollow life until he died and his family was finally free. Despite neither the reader nor Olivia realizing it at first, he does care about her. He wants her to leave before she becomes consumed by their family's curse, because to Matthew, any life, even one alone and mundane, is preferable to his own life of crushing misery and death. The final character and the main villain is the master of the other Gallant. Now, I won't say too much about him in this non-spoiler section since it's a really cool reveal, but he's essentially a being who wants out and needs Olivia to do it, or Matthew. He comes across as a haunting yet inevitable creature, a force of nature personified as opposed to a living creature. Dangerously intelligent and with a calculating cruelty, every time he's in a scene, he seems to suck a bit of life from the world, which is just beautiful, replacing it with a cold facsimile. Honestly, he's just an absolutely wonderful villain. Schwab has a truly captivating writing style that seems to complement the haunting performance of Julian Rindtutt. The Audible audiobook is definitely worth seeking out. Usually an audiobook is just an efficient way for me to read the books for review, but sometimes I come across a reading so good that I have to recommend it. If you can get the audiobook version, do it. Well, I guess that's about it. So, having gone over everything, I'd like to give this a 9 out of 10. The book's a little short, only 350 pages, but it's well worth a read. If you like dark fantasy, historical fantasy, gothic horror, the Lock and Key comics or Netflix show, or Uprooted, then you'll probably enjoy this haunting masterpiece. And with that, we have finished the scripted review section. I hope I'm getting better at reading these. So you can also find my review of this, that formal review that I just read out, or at least a slightly edited version, up on Goodreads, and I will also be posting it to Amazon. It should already be up there, but we'll see. I am sorry if you're listening to this on Buzzsprout. It went up later because I forgot to record this last night. I already had it written down, but the recording just didn't go up. So I'm very, very sorry. Finishing up now, so you can do that. If you're listening to this on YouTube, just ignore the section. I might cut it out. We'll see. Anyway, moving into the spoiler section, there are spoilers here, but like I said, this is a very self-contained, small story, and the reveals aren't, like, they're reveals when you first start reading the book, because it shows how different Olivia is compared to Matthew, but I will just say you can probably listen to the spoiler talk and still get a lot out of it. I personally like to go into things blind, so if you want to go into things blind, it's probably be a good time to head out, go listen to that audiobook, go read that book. You can do either. It's a good book. I definitely recommend it. Moving from here, though, let's get started with the spoiler talk section. 3, 2, 1, spoilers. Okay, so before I get into actually spoiler details, I know I'm derailing myself again, but before I get started there, I do want to mention something. So one of the things I've started doing now that I have a scripted section is writing the scripted section ready for read, and afterwards looking at other people's reviews, seeing what other people have to say about this. And one thing I've heard said is that this is very similar to V.E. Swab's other work. Apparently she has some recurring themes, you know, girl goes into haunted house with mysterious otherworld. It's apparently a very recurring motif in her book, and a lot of people said it was really formulaic compared to her other stuff, that it wasn't as wide or massive. But as someone who went into this with just the idea that it's a short book with by an author I've heard good things about, and it seems to be a self-contained story without any sequel potential, that was something I wanted going in. So to me, those weren't downsides. Those were features. It also definitely serves as an introductory. Like, if this is demonstrative of how her writing works and her different themes that she goes over, the different types of stories she likes to tell, if this is representative, I would definitely see this as a good way to get into her books in the future. In fact, I was going to check out some of her other series and potentially review them for this as like little retro reviews. So if this book's goal is just to introduce you to stuff, or maybe just to get more of her writing, because her writing is fantastic. Even the reviews that didn't like this couldn't help mention, like, yeah, I feel like she's falling back on her writing, but because, you know, the writing here is amazing. You can't trash this writing. This is haunting, like, beautiful stuff. So I did want to point that out there. I heard those other reviews, and I just disagree, personally. So, moving on from that, we're getting to the spoiler talk. There's not much to say here, because like I said, this is a pretty short story, but let's get started. So, I already mentioned the whole thing about Olivia seeing shades. Her mother left her at this orphanage, this girl school, essentially. It's a little vague, but she was left there, she grew up there, she got teased a bit, but then she basically, essentially, reverse bullied her bullies, and now nobody touches her. All she really has is a journal, and when she gets her uncle's letter, she, you know, it's like, they're like, oh, we'll happily ship you out of here to your family. Good riddance. Never see you again. Remember, if you try and knock on that gate, we're not going to open it for you. It's very clear that they do not want her to come back. And so she goes there kind of alone, and I really like the way that they parallel reveal, I'm going to talk about in a second, with her distance from people, which I think is pretty cool. So when she arrives there, it's revealed that her uncle's been dead for a year, like I mentioned. And it turns out the priors, essentially, guard over a gateway to this gray, lifeless world. And inside, there's the master of the Gallant Manor, which is, well, they just call him Death. And he's essentially a personification of death. Not like a Grim Reaper, but like death, the inevitable force of entropy itself. It's goddamn amazing. Like, every line in the scenes where they have Death or the Master of the Manor or whatever in the scene is just fantastic. And it's eventually revealed, the big twist midway through is essentially, so the Priors found essentially a seam where the shadow world meets their reality. So you know how a shadow will always have a seam, a place where it meets the physical thing it's reflecting off of? The wall, one of the walls in the Prior Manor is essentially the seam in reality where this death, lifeless reality meets ours. And the Priors found it because their family, like several other families, they're not unique in this, have the ability to see ghosts. Apparently, it's just a trait in this world. You can see, you know, ghosts or ghouls. And they happen to be a family who stumbled upon this seam to this shadow world. They used some sort of ritual to seal it away and prevent the being inside from getting out. but it essentially became their task to keep it sealed. However, because their blood is the blood that seals it, not only do they have to manage the door, but the entity is constantly trying to get them specifically to release it. See, anyone can repair the door, which is what Matthew realized about a few months after the rest of his family was all dead. He suddenly realized we didn't have to stay here. We weren't responsible. We just had to make sure somebody else. We've actually been putting ourselves at risk and the whole world by staying here and watching over it. And now he does it because he just doesn't have anything left to do. Like, this is all he has. This is all his family has ever done. And so his plan before Olivia arrived was basically to die eventually and pass it over to his servants, who would maintain essentially a line of people to keep the wall maintained. But once the Priors were dead, they couldn't do it. See, the only way to open the door is a Prior has to willingly give his blood and open the door themselves. It can't just kill them. In fact, it's lured Priors into the garden on the other side multiple times, but it found out that their blood, once, if they don't willingly open the door themselves, it can't do shit with the blood. And most of them are cautious enough to close the door when they come in. Basically, they can't let it can't get out unless they let it out, which is very interesting from a certain perspective. It essentially ties them to death. Every time one of them dies, they appear in the manor as a ghost that the rest of the family can see. Olivia actually finds her mother's room and actually sees her mother's ghosts in there, which is, I mean, for her, it's kind of normal because, you know, she's been surrounded by Sades her whole life. And as she explores and finds this hidden place and, you know, figures out the secret of their family, she slowly understands what her mother was meaning when she said, "I stole away across the wall and I met a shade." So death has four shadows, essentially pieces of its soul or whatever it has that it broke off into inanimate beings like puppets, soldiers or bodyguards. And one of the really cool things is that death can create a sort of facsimiles of life. And it does this by like literally tearing chunks out of its body, like bone and flesh, and turning it into beings. And then it can break them down and they turn to ash and all that's left is like a tooth or a rib or whatever. And so the more he expends creating, the more he turns into this like rotting corpse of a man, which is really cool from a certain perspective. I love the descriptions of it. They're just fascinating. But moving on from that, one of the shades was the first, and Death used to let it run around a lot. It was a piece of his mouth, a piece of his jaw from the side of his mouth on the right side. And it was the first one he ever created, and so he let it have a lot more freedom. But the longer these things are animate and on their own, the more they develop a personality. So when Olivia's mother came into the other side and it saw her, it decided to spare her life and help guide her to safety. But Olivia's mother became fascinated, so she started visiting it. And so the secret notes weren't a human, they were essentially one of these shades. After a while, Olivia's mother, now sick of being a Prior, essentially, and in love with this shade, decided to run away, and that's Olivia's father. So she's essentially a child of life and death, which gives her certain abilities, and it makes Death think it can tempt her more than the others. So, in fact, he was the uncle who sent the message. Because it's essentially a piece of him, a brother of sorts, a puppet brother, but still. In a weird way, it wasn't lying, because the letter never named the uncle, it just said, "your uncle." Which is fascinating, because due to the circumstances of her birth, Olivia is sort of a nephew to Death. Maybe a grandnephew or whatever would be, or grandchild would be a more accurate term, but you could probably call her a nephew to Death. So the letter didn't lie. Her uncle did want her back. It's just not the uncle she thought. But however, since the shadow was created to be a puppet, the longer it spent from its strings, the more detached it grew, and eventually it fell apart. So Olivia's father died, and her mother, in rage, destroyed the bone, the piece of death that it made it, because she never wanted to give her love back to that monster. Essentially guarding him from ever losing his individuality, ever being subsumed back into death. Which is sort of like this immensely petty thing, and the Death even realizes, like, yeah, I tried to tempt her and rage at her. That probably wasn't the best move. I should have been more tempting. And again, I need to talk about Death, because he's just so wonderfully written. Like, he comes across as this truly inevitable force. He's not really a living creature. He's not living. He's Death. He's Death personified. Everything he touches crumbles and withers and decays. Bones and blood and ash. And his plans are always very long-term and very inevitable. Like, even when he killed the child, he was still experimenting, trying to figure out a way to get out using their blood. It wasn't just petty. He never kills just to be petty. He comes across as a magnificent bastard, if you've ever looked up TV tropes. And he never breaks down either, not really. He always kind of keeps his cool, even when he gets angry, even when the heroes thwart him near the end, sort of. He always is like, in the end, I get you all. In the end, I get everything. That inevitability that death has. And the characters recognize this. In addition, Olivia being a part of death, her mother eventually, knowing that it's trying to drive her back, decides to leave Olivia with the orphanage and then face her fate, which causes her to die in the manor. And the death has essentially been looking for Olivia all these years. It sent out the letters because the uncle was theorizing about stuff and found these notes. So it basically possessed Matthew sleepwalking. Now he has all these, safeguards against sleepwalking to like open the door or anything. It knew it could never get that done, but it did manage to look at the addresses and possess someone else in the house to essentially send out a bunch of letters in order to draw Olivia back here, because Olivia is a little different. See, since she's a living thing who was born of death, in the normal, she has a sort of authority over ghosts and ghouls. It turns out she can actually control them. And it's first manifest in the Gallant, where she could like since she can't speak, her voice is essentially always in her head. But in Gallant, in the other Gallant anyway, her voice essentially calls out like a megaphone to all the ghosts and spirits in that other world, all the people who died on the other side that were drawn in and murdered. And they defend her, partially because they want to, and also because her power allows her a certain level of coercion over them. However, it's also revealed that just as death causes any life form he touches to drain and crumble to ash and bone, she can revitalize them. When she finds a flower in there, a dead, wilted flower, she brings it back to life with nothing more than her touch. The same way death steals life, she can give it. And death sees an opportunity. After verifying her power, he essentially lures her back in with the hope of Matthew's brother, who vanished but wasn't confirmed dead yet. And when he captures her, he says, "Let me show you something." And he uses his bones to essentially build a facsimile of her family. Now, Olivia, and he basically has them play out their family drama like three freaking times just to break her down. And Olivia is obviously broken up over this, but she tries to stay strong. But then death makes a really convincing offer. And quite frankly, it's probably one of the most convincing offers I've ever seen a villain make. Basically, he informs her that not only can her power bring things back from life, but if their ghosts are around, she might even be able to restore true life to them. He could turn these facsimiles into the actual parents she lost. The shadow is still a part of him, even if the bone was destroyed, and her mother's ghost is just right on the other side of the door. Her power could fully revitalize her parents. She could bring this whole lifeless world back from the brink. Essentially, death's offering her a trade. "I will take your old world, the world where people shunned you, disliked you, even your own cousin wanted nothing to do with you. And you will get your family back, a whole world that you can fill with all the life you want." He's essentially like, "I've used up this one. We can swap. And then, centuries from now, when I've drawn your world to a lifeless husk, I will come for yours. But you'll be long gone. So what does it matter?" And it's just this moment of, like, Olivia will not be happier. Truly, she could be as happy as she wants in this world. She has the ability to revitalize all the plants, all the animals. She could bring this shadow to a glory on par with the world she came from. There are plenty of ghosts whose bodies she could remake. Plenty of her family and countless others over the centuries who have been drawn in here that she can bring back from the brink. She could build a whole new world here. And it would be real. They want to make that very clear. This is real. But death can't make it real. Only life can make it real. Only Olivia has the ability to make this world an actual living world. But she realizes she would have to leave an entire world to die. She would have to essentially throw away everyone else. And she has to overcome that. Because a part of her does want it. A part of her wants to do it. But she knows that she can't. She can't let this thing have an entire world. Even if she could bring this world back, it would still, even at its best, be a pale reflection only designed to make her happy. Yes, even if the world continues out with her, even if she manages to bring back enough ghosts to make it just as vibrant as their world, even if she revitalizes every plant and animal in this realm, it would only be a pale reflection she created at the cost of millions of lives by unleashing this monster. And she refuses, she escapes, and then while they're trying to get out, after learning that the Matthew's brother was actually dead and this was just a trap, obviously they know it's a trap, they figure it's probably a trap, but they're trying to outsmart it. And when Matthew sees the facsimile created like his brother, he's just like, Olivia, just look at him. It's not him. And I actually like that Matthew, the one who became so desperate after years of not wanting to do it, like, Matthew's the one who recognizes. Olivia was actually really encouraging it to go on, but Matthew takes one look and is like, I want to believe that's my brother, but it's not. It's not. And I have promised my family I will not fall here. It's just this great moment where Matthew finally accepts Olivia, essentially accepting Olivia over the promise of his brother, which I really like as a theme for him. Because Matthew essentially pushed everyone else away after his brother died and his father died, and all his family have been just essentially murdered by this monster over the years because they hold the gate closed with their blood. And in the end, while they're trying to reseal it, he ends up having to save Olivia's life and die. And instead of the lonely, quiet death, alone in his room, chained to a bed that he thought he was going to have, it's surrounded by the servants, Edgar and Hannah, who loved him, who cared for him when everyone else was gone, who tried to remember the happy boy before he had been forced with all this responsibility. He wanted Olivia to stay with him, to be with him in these final moments, because he realized that she was his family, and, you know, he didn't want to be alone at the end. Which is, you know, kind of sad. It's essentially this child. It's like, he's like 14, and he's been essentially forced to accept the reality that he will die alone in this house, fighting back the tide of an evil that his family could have ran away from a long time ago, and probably would have been better off for both the world and them, because then it wouldn't have had a chance to escape. And Olivia, Edgar, and Hannah end up burying him. Olivia uses the ghost to push the death back into the door, seal it up, and she essentially takes over Matthew's duties, but this time she tries to nurture the place. She tries to, essentially, it's a sort of bittersweet ending. Like, Olivia's gonna stay here, but she's kind of happy here. It really describes the main difference. Olivia thought of this place as a paradise, which it wasn't. Matthew thought of this place as a punishment, his only duties, it's all he had left, and his responsibility, which it wasn't. It was his and Olivia's responsibility, which he didn't want to acknowledge. And it could be a home with her and him. She was his cousin, his family. And in the end, it did make him happy to have her here. He chose her over this facsimile of her brother, just like she chose Matthew and the rest of the world, which she had been pushing away, over the facsimiles and potential resurrection of her parents. Which is interesting. I like it as a character arc and a good overall conclusion, even if it ends bittersweet with her and Matthew's ghost playing the piano together. One of the things that's really interesting about this book overall, too, is the fact that Olivia is mute. And a lot of stories, like, the mute character will have, like, one line of dialogue, but she's just mute all the way through, which I kind of liked. It makes her communication issues with other people an actual issue. And it parallels her inability to communicate with anything but the dead, which actually, is essentially her power. She can't speak, but the dead hear her and obey, which is fascinating as an aspect of death, as, you know, a being of life born from death, that she's able to communicate more with ghosts than she can with actual people, but she still desperately wants to communicate with people, even though it's difficult. Yes, communication and accepting your family is the main themes of this. Go figure. some common themes to learn things around, but I do think the way they use her mute, the fact that she's mute, is very, I don't want to say unique. I think I've seen other things like this. But, like, it's not something you see often. And actually handles the ending of it better than I think a lot of others do. So, all in all, I think this is a really good book. It has solid themes. The characters are very nice. But, as you might have guessed, there really isn't that much to go on. I went over all the major things. It's, she arrives, she, you know, basic setup at the boarding school. She goes to her house, finds out her uncle's not gone. Cousin doesn't want there. She spends the night, gets drawn into the shadow world, escapes, and then she has to talk about the cousin she saw. It's Matthew's little brother. They plan a new escapade, they have the confrontation with Death, and they head back, Matthew dies, and Olivia has her epilogue. That's basically the whole book. There's not much to this, but it's so beautifully written, and the characters are fairly well realized that I really like it. In addition, one of the things I like near the ending is it's not just bittersweet because Olivia has to keep guard over the door, but she also left her mother's journal, which is the only thing that connected her to any sort of other life throughout her existence, and something she was literally able to... she would basically traumatize several of the girls at her boarding school for trying to damage it. And it was essentially her most prized treasure, her mother's words that she'd memorized, but the book was still a comfort. Her father's drawings. And the fact that she is willing to keep the door closed and not chase after it signifies she's come to terms with her mother, her family, and her place in the world. She's found a place she's happy with. She's no longer chasing some ideal life. She's happy with the life she's managed to carve for herself. So I thought those were some interesting ideas. Wanted to add those on. But yeah, that's about it. So we're going to talk about what's coming up next. So this week, if you're listening on Buzzsprout, or last week, I am doing my Corey stream. Now, next week, or if, again, if you're listening on YouTube this week, let's just say I'm recording this on the 7th on July 5th. So if you're listening to this on the 12th, then know that I am not going to be streaming on the week of the 11th through the 16th, because I will be on call for work. I'm hoping to finish the quarry up this week, so that won't be an issue. But if I don't, the quarry review will be coming in a few weeks, so give that time. Next review is going to be Thor Love and Thunder. Get ready for that on Thursday. It's going to be a lot of fun. Can't wait for it. Really excited. Come on, Taika Waititi. Don't mess up this movie. He's doing this one, right? I'll have to go check. Anyhow, that's basically everything for now. See you guys next time. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode, and thank you for listening to The Dragon's Library. Please subscribe to this podcast to be notified of new episodes. The Dragon's Library releases new episodes Tuesday and Friday each week, and you can follow us on Twitter at dragon_library2. If you want to suggest an episode topic, my email is in the description below. And as always, thank you so much for all your support.